Good morning. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. The definition of stigma is a mark of disgrace associated with a particular circumstance, quality, or person. If someone or something is stigmatized, they are unfairly regarded by many people or by society as being bad or having something to be ashamed of. This stigma, as it relates to mental health, is perhaps the biggest barrier to people seeking effective treatments for serious conditions like depression, anxiety, and other mood disorders. The CDC estimates that 25% of adults in the U.S. experience a mental health condition in any given year, and that 45% will experience mental illness at some point in their lifetime. In addition, 49% of teens will experience a diagnosable mental health condition between the ages of 13 and 18. These treatable conditions have a huge impact on our health and can often be life-threatening. Mental illness impacts all races, genders, and people from across the socioeconomic spectrum. Why then is it that mental health awareness and advocacy programs are often poorly funded and take a backseat to more profitable and socially acceptable medical conditions like cancer and heart disease? The answer? Stigma and silence. Please stay with us for the next hour as Anchorage High School students Keegan Blaine, Burt Croft, and Sydney Bidwell share how their group, Mental Health Advocacy Through Storytelling, or MHATS, is working to advocate for mental health and change the stigma associated with mental illness through telling of stories. Welcome to the show. I'm really, really excited to have some young people on for a change. We have a bunch of experts on here who talk a lot about young people and what we know. So we have the real experts now. I guess we can start with getting some introductions, just about a little bit about yourselves, what you're doing, where you're going to school, that kind of stuff. I guess we can start with Keegan.
All right. I'm Keegan, and I'm a senior at Diamond High School. I've been with MHAT since the beginning as an organizer. Why I joined the program, I think, would be a good, or a project would be a good place to start. Well, my friend Natalie, who was the ringleader of this entire thing, approached me and said she had this idea for this awesome storytelling project that had to do with mental health advocacy. And I've always been somebody that's been a huge fan of storytelling and the power of storytelling, and also of mental health advocacy, being somebody who's been in treatment and still in treatment, being somebody who has a lot of friends who struggle with mental health issues is something really close to my heart. And so I figured this was the perfect opportunity to kind of get my voice out there and help make others feel like they weren't as alone.
Great. Burke?
My name's Burke Croft. I'm a senior at West High, and I joined MHATS. I heard about it from Natalie, and I think a lot of my reasonings are similar to Keegan's. I've also seen a lot of people dealing with mental health in my community, and just the conversations around it are not at all equivalent to the magnitude of the problem, and I wanted to try and do whatever I could to try to change that.
All right, and Sydney.
Hi, I'm Sydney Bidwell. I'm a junior at West High School, and I joined MHATS on a very spur-of-the-moment decision. Immediately when I heard about it and saw the poster, I was just like, okay, I'll do this thing. But for some reason, it very much called to me, and I'm very happy I joined it because I've learned a lot.
All right. Well, I'm super excited to have you all here, and we're going to hear some stories. We're going to answer some questions. Hopefully, we'll get some phone calls if people want to call in and participate. I want to remind folks that this is a live show, and we are accepting phone calls. There's three ways that you can join us today. You can call us if you're in Anchorage at our local number, which is 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, anywhere you might be listening, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. The last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you've never emailed us before, you got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E. O-N-E. All right. Well, let's, you mentioned Natalie. I understand she was going to be one of the ones who was on the show, but she's off, I think, in Juneau advocating for something.
Yeah, she's there with NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, and she's there advocating for more public funds for mental illness issues.
All right, you guys are getting involved.
yeah.
Which is really cool to have this next generation of folks coming up and sort of changing this conversation, which is, you know, what we're here to do. This idea for the show was kind of born. A friend of mine sent, you know, me an email and said, there's this really cool group of kids doing this really cool project. I'll say kids, young adults. I'll intermix that. I don't want to call y'all kids. You seem pretty mature. But so I came to one of your story development hours and sort of listened to you all talk about advocacy and stigma. And I was really impressed by the dialogue that was going on. And so if each of you can talk a little bit just briefly about what that what stigma means to you all and how this has sort of changed your perspective on that or participating in this project. Keegan, you want to start?
Yeah. So stigma, at least to me, it's one of those things that is really hard to attack because it comes in so many different forms. It's often not identified by the person that holds it. It's often something that's held on intentionally, like a natural aversion to somebody who, you know, seems to be, you know, show signs of depression or be more withheld. And it's also something that people do hold consciously because they are told that, you know, mental illness is wrong and isn't fixed. My story actually deals with my own personally held stigma. And that's another thing that we've talked about a lot, is that anybody can have stigma, even somebody that has struggled with mental illness for so long.
It seems like a lot of the images of people with mental illness that are out there in the media just is part of the problem. As I said in the introduction, it impacts really about half of the population at some point in their lifetime. And, you know, so you got a family of four. That's two of you, if my math is correct. and it really is, I think, part of what you all are doing is trying to get the word out there and sharing your story, like just how people talk about cancer diagnosis or some other medical illness. You want to talk a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Like my personal main experience with stigma has been like self-inflicted mostly, where I tend to a lot of times invalidate what I'm feeling in different situations and kind of put it down as something that I shouldn't be or anything along those lines. And I think that's somewhat common with a lot of people, where people don't like to accept what they're feeling and they kind of will invalidate it and say that it isn't essentially like right to sometimes feel that. And just being part of MHATS and hearing other people's stories, like hearing stories from people that I've known for long times and hearing more detailed like descriptions of their own stories about mental health has also has largely made me realize that like what I feel is not at all unique to me, and it's a very common thing that many people are feeling. Like half of the population seems like overinflated, I think, to many. And like even now working with MHATS, it seems like a lot. However, like that is just how prevalent mental illness and mental health is. Like everyone experiences mental health difficulties at some point in their life, whether it's mental illness diagnosable or not. And so it's important to understand that like that your like emotions are never invalid, and what you're going through is never a purely or is not unique to you necessarily. I mean, like, it's important to you and unique to you in a certain way, but it isn't only you going through it, and you are not over exaggerating things if you are being true to your feelings. And so that's a big thing that I've learned through MHATS more and more. Now, I've been able to fight my own stigma, especially when it's turned inwards, by hearing other stories by other people that I've known for so long, but I'm just now like hearing their stories for the first time.
Yeah, so you've internalized, or you were internalizing a lot of that the outward images of mental health as being you're broken, you're somehow not good enough, there's something wrong with you. And Sydney, you're nodding your head. It seems like you know what he's talking about.
Very much, yeah.
What's it done for you, Sydney, being raising your awareness of stigma with this group? I mean, what's sort of shifted in your consciousness about your own stigma or the stigma that you applied to yourself, and how's it changed your thinking?
Well, I think I was in the category of not realizing I held stigma a lot of the time, because before this project, I felt as if I were just, I could never have like anything like this, and I didn't even have like a mental health story or something. But once I heard other people's stories, I started to realize that like my voice is just as powerful, and everybody has like problems that they have to deal with, and they shouldn't be like stigmatized for it.
Yeah, you're not alone. I think that's something I'm hearing is when you start to tell your stories, and we'll talk about a little bit about the power of storytelling in a moment. I want to remind listeners, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection, and we are speaking with some young folks about the power of stories and the stigma and how to advocate for mental health awareness. If you have a question or a comment, we can be reached at 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. You can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, it seems like, has the idea of mental health, like in my generation, nobody talked about it. If you went to a therapist, I remember my dad was a therapist, and it turns out years later, I found out that he saw some people that I knew from my high school, and I never knew that because he was really good about confidentiality, which is, you know, important. But now, like, I go to the fair, and, you know, a teenager will see me and be like, oh, there's my therapist, and run up and introduce me to their friends, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. It seems like there's a shift in consciousness for, you know, young people today, in their, you know, teens and 20s, that it's more normalized. And that's sort of what we're here talking about today. It seems like it's okay to say, I struggle with this, or is that accurate? Am I right in my understanding of it?
Yeah, I definitely know a lot of friends who, you know, talk about that. We'll be having a conversation about, you know, oh man, this teacher is really stressing me out, and it's a huge like stress in my life or whatever. And they're like, oh yeah, I was talking to my therapist about that yesterday. And I think that's an amazing thing to start hearing about, because I know when I started seeing a therapist in middle school, I was mortified. And I think that's something I've seen change even in my own lifetime, even in like the relatively short period of time that I've been in treatment, is it's something that both as we've gotten older, as my generation's gotten older, and as mental health has become less stigmatized and a little bit more recognized in society, that people are talking about more, you know, even just what they're talking about, like, talking to my therapist has made me so much calmer about school and stuff like that. It's really, I've seen a huge uptick in that, I agree.
Yeah, and like on day-to-day conversations, we're just asking, like, how was your day or something. There have been times my friends have been like, I had a great day. I had a just amazing conversation with my therapist, and I made my whole day feel better. And so that kind of just, it's becoming more and more, regular day-to-day, just to mention that you went to a therapist and that made your day better, worse, or whatever, that having that conversation is becoming more and more normal.
And I think that conversation about having a therapist and stuff is also, like, it's very helpful for, like, everybody to think about their own mental health. And, like, now, for myself, I've actually come to believe that everybody needs a therapist, and, like, everybody needs somebody to talk to about their mental health and stuff. And I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do.
Well, Dr. Woodard, who sort of was my mentor on the radio and who did this show for many, many years, is has always been his, one of his, you know, sayings is that everybody should be given mental health insurance coverage, and then they can get optional physical health, because mental health drives so many things and it impacts so many people and it affects our physical health in so many ways. Anxiety infects heart, you know, impacts heart disease and diabetes. I mean, stress, cortisol is a tremendous toxin if it's held for a long time. And so he was long an advocate of the importance of treating the mind and the body. And I think for a long time we've ignored that. So this is exciting. The other thing I wanted to ask you all about is, like, there's this image, and it's, I think, perpetuated in the media about this next generation as being entitled and, you know, just stuck on your cell phones all the time. None of you have your cell phones out right now. And not being involved, but after the Parkland shooting and with climate change, that seems to be driven by young people in a lot of ways. And are you guys, I mean, there does seem to be a lot of activism going on and involvement, and groups like yours is not the only one, like MHATS is not the only one that's happening. So is there a I mean, that's a misunderstanding of this generation. You guys seem very active.
110%. I like to point out to people when they say, like, oh, this, you know, this generation will never care, they're too stuck on social media and too stuck on their phones. I like to credit social media with helping me get started in social activism and getting more involved in my community, because I was involved in March for Our Lives last year. How I found out about that was through a friend on Instagram asking me. Natalie approached me over a social media platform about this, like, project. And I think that I like to credit, you know, it's not 100% social media that's increased awareness among teens, but it is so much easier for peers to educate each other when they have a platform that people will actually kind of listen to. It's not always accurate, and I know there's a ton of problems with, you know, the spreading of misunderstandings and inaccurate information over social media, but at the same time, it's a huge asset. I know we are advertising for our final community event, or like the culmination of this entire project, through mostly social media, sending it to different community organizations to post on their pages, and then also through things like these. There's a ton of different things, aspects that social media has really helped boost our generation's community involvement, at least in my opinion.
I mean, also in a larger sense, I think, right, at least in my friends and the people youth have talked about that, or talked to, is that people are more and more frustrated about a lot of inaction on issues that we've seen day to day. And, like, that's really strongly related to the Parkland shooting and things like March for Our Lives, where the inaction has almost forced our hand into joining activism and more speaking out about issues that matter to us, that whether on a grassroots level or at a federal level, at any point in there, more and more youth are just getting frustrated that the changes they want to see in their community aren't being taken, action isn't being taken on those issues. And so we're just taking it into our own hands more and more. And I think that's what's really driving a lot of our generation to not really fit into the, like, millennial stereotype, as people, or as many, like to say, of lazy and just on social media, that we're more and more trying to take the torch and actually push these issues that matter to us.
So it's the inaction of us old people, is what you're saying. Like, that is sort of, we have to do something.
Yeah. I think that ultimately there, you know, our entire generation is not involved the same way we are. Just like your entire generation is not inactive. I mean, you're letting us on this show. That's the action on your part. But I do think that it is really frustrating to watch time and time again, as, you know, our generation's voices aren't heard, especially because we're the ones inheriting this country next. And we're the ones that have to deal with the mistakes of the past generations, of the disregard of climate change, of the disregard for our safety in schools. We have to deal with those consequences, not them. And so I think people are starting to finally realize, like, we're in control of our own fate and we're in control of the society that we inherit. So why not actually use that control?
Yeah, I did read somewhere, somebody was talking about how we're having like 70-year-olds make decisions about climate change who are not going to be here in 15 years, right?
So oh, yeah.
That seems kind of absurd. If you're just joining us, my guests are Anchorage High School students Keegan Blaine, I think Grant Burke. That's not your name.
Burke Croft.
I don't know why I have that. Yes, Burke Croft. I knew that was wrong. And Sydney Bidwell, who are talking today about mental health advocacy and are sharing their stories in order to reduce the stigma of mental health. After this short break, we'll return to our discussion. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
Now is a good time to make sure your immunizations are up to date. Measles outbreaks are happening as close as Washington State, a common travel destination for many Alaskans. Our public health officials are urging Alaskans to ensure that all of their immunizations, including the MMR vaccine, are current. Protect yourself and your family and the whole community. To learn more, including vaccine requirements for schools and daycares, visit immunize.dhss.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. My guests are Anchorage High School students Keegan Blaine, Burke Croft, and Sydney Bidwell, who are talking today about mental health advocacy and are sharing, or they will be sharing, their stories in order to kind of reduce the stigma of mental health. If you have a question or a comment about today's topic, please give us a call or send us an email. Our phone number in Anchorage is 550-8433, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. The last way to get on the air is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. So if you have your own story out there that you would like to share, or some experience with stigma or your own shame, or battling to be honest with your own experience of mental health, you want to talk about that and share that with us here on Line One. Don't leave these young folks as the only ones who are doing it. That would be great if you want to call in and just share with it or ask them a question. We welcome calls, so don't hesitate to call in or give us an email. All right, so perhaps now is a good time for a story. Who would like to start?
I can start.
We'll start with Keegan.
I'll start. Let's go ahead.
Everybody points the finger at me.
I'm a little confused about that. I guess I'll just start it. Cool. Sorry. This is my first time kind of sharing it publicly outside of the group.
Yeah, it's only like, I don't know, 40,000 people or something.
No big deal, right? So I always like to start by talking about my entrance to North Star Behavioral Health Center. On a cold December night, just over 2 weeks before my 14th birthday, I was admitted to North Star Behavioral Health Center after a breakdown. The entire night surrounding my admission was filled with these vivid emotions, violent anger, numbing sadness, and this suffocating hopelessness. Once my vision had cleared and my mind had actually calmed, I only knew one thing, that I was terrified. But I wasn't terrified of being in the hospital or of the doctors or even the things that were going on in my own head. I was terrified of the other girls in the hospital with me. So I've had a long history with mental illness. Most, if not all, of my friends have some form of diagnosed illness. I have a family history that has gone largely unaddressed, mainly due to stigma that they experienced growing up in the Midwest. And I, looking back at my childhood, have demonstrated signs of mental illness since I was very young, and I'm still in treatment to this day. But just because I have this history with mental illness doesn't mean that I never personally held any stigma about it. When I was hospitalized for depression and self-harm, there was a lot going through my head. I was disoriented and emotionally distraught. I actually don't remember much of the beginning of my admission or the first few days there. I spent the majority of the 2.5 weeks I spent there convincing myself that I was different from every patient there, that I didn't belong. And I was hellbent on making sure that I never became one of what I called those girls. This stigma and this perception that I held of the patients there with me, I never really paid much attention to them. Even today, I really can't tell you any of the names of the girls I met. I believed immediately that they were all violent people, that they would scream and yell for no reason, that they were emotionally uncontrollable. And I actually believed that they were all unintelligent and hopeless and that they really had no future. But I had never met any of them. When I left the hospital and continued on in my treatment, I still believed some of those things, and I actually held that stigma really close to my heart for a long time. And only after having open conversations with friends and my therapist did I realize the stigma I held was actually stigma. Just recently, actually, during a conversation at a workshop for MHATs, I began thinking about this repeating thought that I had while I was in the hospital. I'm not like them. And I was led to a realization. It's not that I wasn't them. It's that they weren't them either. None of those girls were themselves. Everybody there was at one of the lowest points in their entire life. Starting this project, and at many points along its development, I felt like a hypocrite. As I sit here now telling my story, that feeling still remains. Who am I to tell you all here today how to recognize and fight stigma when I couldn't even do it myself for a long time? But just like my treatment, my fight against my own stigma is a continuous and a difficult process, one that I can't and haven't done alone. Through conversations and embracing an open mindset, I've come this far. While I'm not quite sure what else I can do or even how far I have to go yet, I know that by keeping an open mind and actively looking to improve my perception of others with mental illness, I can help not only help myself, but help others combat personally held stigma. During the same discussion when I came to my first realization about the stigma, I was asked what I would say to one of the girls I was in North Star with if I met them now. I was kind of dumbfounded by this question. I never really thought about that because I was really focused on, you know, the own progression of my treatment. And only after, you know, becoming more stable in my own existence did I think about where they might have been now. I would say to them, I didn't once see you as anything but your struggles and the worst version of yourself, and that's not fair. But I know better now. I know that nobody is only their illness and that it'll never define a single person. I can only hope that I can have the opportunity to tell one of them that one day and that nobody will see me like that, the same way that I saw my fellow patients in North Star. And that's the reason why I'm here today.
Thank you. Yes, quiet applause from Burke. All right, it's so interesting to hear that story, and having spoken to you and talked to you, and what you said about seeing people for their worst selves, like none of that stuff ever comes to mind. None of those struggles when talking to you at the workshop and talking to you on the phone and emailing with you and setting up this show. That's a really great point.
Yeah, it's not many people, you know, go to inpatient centers like I did. I mean, there are many that do go, but there's a much larger amount that don't. And it's a very unique experience. You learn a lot about yourself, and it stays a learning experience for a lot longer than after you leave treatment. And that's a shared sentiment that others who have gone to treatment have kind of agreed with me on, is that it's something that you don't really ever forget and you don't ever really stop learning from.
All right. We have a caller, so we'll go ahead. He's been waiting for a minute. Brennan, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi. Before you went on the break, I heard, I think, Sydney make kind of a, you know, an offhand comment about how everyone should have a therapist. And I realized that was kind of like in a half-joking manner. But I want to challenge that idea, not because, you know, people shouldn't, you know, divulge emotions and process them and sort them out with the help of other people, but that therapists can be made in a lot of cases obsolete simply by more community involvement like empaths. So, you know, what do you say about that?
You know, personally, like, I think the more resources, the better in a long way. Like, I think we have to make important communal changes as well and open up conversations between people. But there's never any harm in including a professional in mental health as well. And in some ways, you're never really going to completely replace a mental health professional. Like, there's a reason they've had that training and they are well, a professional. And so I think I understand your point, and like I completely agree that we need to focus a lot on community as well. However, I think that increasing more opportunities to talk about mental health and be open with these issues, the more opportunities, the better. And so if you have the resources, I think everyone everyone should get a therapist still.
Yeah, Brennan, I think as a therapist, my job is to put myself out of business. and, you know, I often say that, and I think you make a good point. Like, but people who are active physically and take care of themselves and go to exercise classes and have friends and connection, they don't have as many physical health problems and don't go to the doctor as much. But every now and then, like, certainly we all have regular checkups with a physician. We all go, you know, and if we have something strange that happens in our body that we can't talk to a friend about, like, I don't know what this is, perhaps I should go see a doctor. So, yeah, you make a really good point, Brennan, and I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Sydney, since that was for you, like, do you want to respond to that comment? I mean, I get your point. Everybody should have like one kind of on call. It doesn't mean you go to the therapist all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe a lot of the same effect of having a therapist can also like be just having friends that you can talk to. And though a therapist is like a mental health professional, and you can never like replicate that because of the extensive training that they've had and how they know how to deal with certain situations, sometimes you just need somebody to talk to, and having that opportunity open to somebody in their time of need is really helpful. And therapy can come in a lot of ways. It could just be like a helpline or like a call line that you make if you need to. That could like, and if you need more help, then you could go to a therapist. But like, I think always having the opportunity open is great. And I do agree with Brendan that like a supportive community can go a long way.
Yeah, connection really matters. But I think sometimes when you're feeling really isolated and really alone and you don't feel like maybe you can talk to your parents or your friends about something that is really bothering you, having an outside person mm-hmm. who's not connected to you intimately and is not going to get all freaked out like your parents will, because parents don't respond well all the time in a situation where their child comes to them and says, hey, I got this thing going on. Yeah, a person to sort of start that process rolling, give you some insight into that it's really not, it's something that can be overcome. That's, I think a lot of people don't understand that these things can really be helped with a consistent and regular approach. Mm-hmm. All right, if you're just tuning in, we are discussing mental health stigma and advocacy with some Anchorage High School students, Keegan Blaine, Burke Croft, and Sydney Bidwell. They're sharing their stories. I did get an email that said, how about some stories, right before Keegan shared her story.
You got your stories.
Yeah, so there's one, and we'll get to some more. So if you have a question or a comment, please give us a call and share your story or some words with our guests. Our Anchorage number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. I had another email. It said, from James, said, the only world cultures that I'm aware of that respected members of their culture that were afflicted with mental illness were the American Native peoples, both North and South America. So indigenous cultures throughout the world, schizophrenia is a good example. Oftentimes that is held up as a unique and special gift. Mental health is often not thought of in other parts of the world as the same way it is here. All right, so we got, 6 minutes before our next break. Why don't we go ahead with another story? Who's got about a 6 minute story? Sydney, okay. you wanna go ahead and share with us?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So when I was younger, my sister and I were two peas in a pod. We didn't go to the same school, but though we were apart during the day, I would think about her all during class. When I get home, we'd play with our toys and our figurines, and for like 4 hours a day, my mom used to say that we would join at the hip. So we would play with our figurines, with our Barbies, with everything. We'd fight about whose hair would be longer when we'd get older. And then one day, she stopped playing with me. So this caused me to begin acting tough and independent. Like, I don't need you. I don't need my older sister to play with me. But really inside, it very much hurt me as a person because I thought she didn't value me as a friend anymore. So with my continuously shattering bond between my sister and I, it began to feel like she was just a stranger who happened to live in the same home. I was just an immature fifth grader while she was a developing and increasingly shut-in seventh grader. We didn't really talk much at the time, and it became more and more, like, often for us to fight and just berate each other. So, as siblings do, I made fun of her for her habits. I made fun of her for her acne on her back that my mom had to put a cream on. I made fun of her for her obsession over going to the bathroom and looking at herself in the mirror. I made fun of her over wearing makeup and over watching romantic movies. And which are all normal parts of growing up as a teenage girl, but I never really got a clarification on, like, why she was doing this, because I was so confused at the time. So I was confused about the new person that she was becoming, confused about why we didn't play anymore, confused as to why she spent so long in front of the mirror, confused as why she never came out of her room, and as to why she had long, hushed chats with my mother behind closed doors. So I didn't really realize how this was affecting her, how my attitude toward her was affecting her. And one day I noticed her absence, and it took me actually from our home, and it took me actually 2 days to realize that she wasn't, like, living in our home because of the lack of connection I had with her. I remember nobody actually explicitly said what happened to her and why she was gone, but one day my mother told me to gather some stuff that she liked, and we're going off to see her, like, we're going off in the car. And I didn't know where we were going. I didn't know why she was there and why she wasn't with us. And I didn't know any of it. But I brought her favorite things I knew. I brought her a pint of strawberries, her favorite food. And I brought her some figurines that we used to play with a couple years ago when we were joined at the hip. And when I got there, when I got to the hospital, she didn't realize. Because of the pills that she had taken, she didn't recognize me. And I sat beside her, and she ate the strawberries, and she looked at me straight in the face with blank eyes and a small smile. And I could tell that she didn't recognize the fighting that had just been going on a couple weeks earlier, or the hatred, the apparent hatred that we had for each other. She just looked at me, and I showed her the figurine, and she held it, and she laughed with me, and she it was like we were together again and like everything was fine. And I didn't realize at the time, but she was my sister, and I didn't realize how my attitude and how my thinking had like affected her as a person. And for a lot of my life after that and before that, I had tried to become anything that she wasn't, because of how I like how I didn't like how she spent time looking in the mirror. She wore makeup. I tried to do everything I could to not do that. I made rules for myself. I wouldn't wear pink. I wouldn't wear purple. I wouldn't do a bunch of things. I would ignore basic hygiene because she took like 2 or 3 showers a day to get rid of her acne. So I would not take a shower for a week. And on and on, this like affected me as a person, my mental health, my relationships, not just with my sister, but with my family and with my friends. And that day in the hospital, looking at her and holding the figurine together, I had to seriously reconsider how my actions could affect people and my own, like how it affects my own mental health, like my how my attitude towards people and towards life can affect myself. And today she's doing just fine. Though we're not the closest and I can't claim to be her best friend again, we do have peaceful conversations and we are there for each other. And so that's a very big support system in my life that I was lacking beforehand. And it took me a long time to get over my thoughts of trying to not be anything but her. But the more I got to change my attitude and experiences with other people, the more I was open to myself and to finding myself. And instead of basing my personality over what I didn't want to be, I started basing my personality over who I was.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that. We're just going to leave it right there and let people kind of let that soak in. If you're just joining us, my guests are Anchorage High School students Keegan Blaine, Burke Croft, and Sydney Bidwell, who are talking today about mental health advocacy and sharing their stories in order to reduce the stigma of mental health. After this short break, we'll return to our discussion. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
Line One, Your Health Connection is supported by a grant from the Alaska Mental Health Trust and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning into the program, my guests today are Anchorage High School students Keegan Blaine, Grant Burke, and Sydney Bidwell, who are talking today about mental health advocacy and are sharing their stories in order to reduce the stigma of mental health. We'll only be able to take calls and emails for the next, 10 minutes or so, and we got one more story we want to make sure we're going to get to, so we're going to move to that next. If you want to make a comment or you have a question for my panel of experts, you can reach us in Anchorage at 550-8433. You can also reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. I did want to ask, and Keegan, you probably know the answer to this. You mentioned the culminating event of MHATs, or some, there's a, can you tell us about that, when it is, what that
yes.
is, and kind of promote it a little bit?
I can. So on April 19th at 6 p.m., we at the Church of Love on Spinard, we will be having all of our storytellers and organizers come together and pretty much share their stories in this big community event. We'll have door prizes. We'll have a ton of community resources here just to talk to everybody that showed up. We'll have student art on display. Student artists from around ASD responded to the prompt, "What does mental health mean to you?" And so we'll be displaying their art there. And we're just kind of here to have a good time and celebrate and support mental health advocacy in our community. So if you're in Anchorage, you're not doing anything that Friday, come on over to Church of Love.
All right, that's quite an invite. Come to the Church of Love and hear some stories. We'll go to a caller. We have Amelia, you're calling. You have a question or a comment?
Oh, was this for Amelia?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, sorry, you just couldn't tap partway through. Yeah, one thing that I unfortunately have learned through, you know, an experience with addiction myself is the lack of beds and treatment options here in the entire state of Alaska. We have an extremely limited number of beds, and I don't know the options for teens and young adults, but I know that addiction faces is a problem that everybody faces from teen to adult, and I just wondered about, wanted to ask if the young folks today have encountered any solutions or any homemade solutions to the problem of addiction, because it's very hard to be treated here in the state of Alaska.
So for boosting treatment options, I know that's something that you mentioned. That's definitely a societal stigma problem, and that's something we're definitely, as we've talked about time and time and again, working against. If we can boost awareness about mental illness, and especially making sure that addiction is grouped in there with that, because a lot of times people don't recognize that addiction. It is in that health. I mean, having an addiction is a sign of like a mental illness. And so one thing that we are trying to do and hoping that is an increase in recognition of mental illnesses and the struggle with addiction will hopefully lead to some maybe more openness to an increase in treatment options in Anchorage and across the state. But we've kind of got to get over that hump first, convincing people that mental illness is just as important as any other physical ailment you could have.
And Amelia, I would I appreciate the call and you bringing the attention to addiction, because it is perhaps the most stigmatized, especially when we're talking about opiate addiction and so, you know, alcoholism. I mean, that is one of the most stigmatized conditions around. And we talk about these co-occurring, you know, a dual diagnosis treatment where you have. I've never met anybody with an addictive process going on that did not have some, like, depression, anxiety, something like that. I think it's short-sighted as a society to not invest highly in treatment options for people who have addiction problems, but the problem is the long-term reward is not what gets people elected. Addiction treatment is expensive, and it takes a lot of resources. So, but the payoff long-term, 10, 15, 20 years, is reduced jails, more productivity, families that are more intact. And so, yes, it is a huge problem and one that I think is well worth investing in on the front end. All right. So I want to go ahead and move to our last story. I know there's a lot of questions I do want to read one email real quick because I know that will be fast. Thank you for sharing all your stories and being on air. I am the spouse of someone with bipolar, and for a long time I would not joke about it and scoffed at people that did. But recently I was thinking about how acknowledging mental health and illness through humor may be beneficial. What are your thoughts?
I personally can't agree more. I think humor is a natural way to cope with a lot of issues. And there's a fine line between making fun of and just bringing light to issues. And that's a fine line you have to be aware of and make sure that in humor you're not actively creating more stigma with the jokes you're making. But I think just having humor around it, humor is a natural thing we all respond to. And so it is absolutely natural and positive to address a lot of these issues through humor.
Yeah. Talk to your spouse and make sure it's okay with them, of course. Make sure that if you're making jokes about it, make sure that everybody's on the same page as you, of course. But other than that, humor makes everybody feel a little bit better. And I think especially about a tense topic or a taboo topic like mental illness, it can go a long ways.
Yeah, humor at the right time. I mean, the comments that are made to me from my wife about ADD boy, she comes in and all the cabinet doors are open and she's like, living with ADD, right? And, it's not intended to harm. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and make sure we get to your story. I would hate to miss that. And we're down to our last 8 or 9 minutes. So why don't you take us to the end here. I mean, maybe we'll get some sign off, but go ahead and take us out.
I'll be sure to fit it in. Okay. I am an avid Spotify user. Anytime I can, I listen to music, and I genuinely love every one of my playlists that I've made. Because each one of my playlists, usually that I make, it's really representative of a certain time in my life. Usually at one time, I only listen to one playlist for most of my time. It's my go-to set of songs. And so whenever I move on to another one, the old one serves as a memento or a time capsule for a special time in my life. And whenever I feel I want or nostalgic for that time or the people or anything about that time, the songs that I heard at that time in my life are some of the best ways to bring me back. So today for my story, I'd like to talk about two of some of the most significant playlists that happened to me and the transition between them. So to start this, I have to go back to last summer, where my go-to playlist at that time was a breakup playlist. Title as a breakup seems it's kind of oversimplistic. At that time, kind of chronic sleep depression and a lot of serious stress, as well as going through a breakup, kind of all culminated to what I didn't really know at the time, but I can now recognize as a months-long depressive episode. And there really aren't many great songs about sleep deprivation or stress, so when I went to make a playlist, because that's what I do best, I made one about breakups. And because out of the 15 billion songs about breakups, I'm sure there'd be enough for me to make a playlist out of. And it was a really peculiar one, but one that I'm actually weirdly proud of. Because all the lyrics in the songs weren't naturally about breakups, a lot of the normal storylines in that. But where it becomes peculiar is because of the genre of music I chose. Because every one of those songs was an electronic dance music song. And it's a weird combination, absolutely. But it worked out really well with how I was feeling at that time. Because when I was feeling low, the lyrics were with me. And I could listen to this almost pre-recorded message that I was sending to myself. That what you're feeling is valid and it's okay. And it's okay even to not be okay. And when I was up, I could dance to this incredibly happy dance music. And together it seems like a weird combination. But because of how I was feeling at that time, it really worked out for me. And a lot of nights and times where I could feel myself slipping away into more and more of a depressive state, I could listen to that, and slowly I'd more and more feel the music rather than listening to the lyrics, and I would be able to pull myself out with that playlist. And so that was my go-to playlist for multiple months. And the And I was stuck in a lot of that episode for a while, until October of last year. And I don't know exactly when, but all I can remember is that it was a Thursday. But I had of one song stuck in my head for about a week at that point. It was Shout by the Isley Brothers. And like, for those of you who don't know, it is this outrageously happy song made from around 1960. And it's a song in Animal House for the toga party scene. Like, it is this song that when you hear it, you almost have to dance. And I don't know why, but I had just been listening to that on repeat. Any chance I could, I was listening to it. So that day after school, I went to the house I was house sitting, and I was listening to it on repeat. And I was almost getting sick of it, but at the same time, I really wasn't, because I still wanted to listen to it again. And so at some point, I decided to do what I do best and make a playlist around it. And so I just started grabbing all the happiest songs I could possibly think of. And from anywhere I could really find it, from the Beatles to Stevie Wonder to K-pop and Vampire Weekend. Like, I was just grabbing any happy songs I could get my hands on. And I was having the time of my life making this playlist and listening to these songs. And I mean, really, the music is only as good as your dance partner. And that night, I had the best one in town. Because the truth was, I wasn't really house sitting. I was dog sitting. Specifically dog sitting this tiny poodle named Bo. And he, to this day, is the cutest dog I have ever met. Like, he naturally sleeps on his back in what is objectively the cutest way for a dog to sleep. And so Bo and I were just dancing around this one-story house, listening to these outrageously happy songs. And during that night, I more and more realized that I was happier then than I had been in months. And also in that, I figured it out. And what it is I've had a hard time summing it up in just a couple words. But the way I made sense of it to myself at that time, especially, was through a metaphor of peaks and valleys. And how, like, when you're in a valley, when you look around you, you can only really see where you are at that time. It can become really tempting to think that this is what I've always felt, this is what I really always feel, or even say that this is who I am. However, when you get to a valley, you suddenly get, you get to a lot more perspective about, you can look behind you, maybe look ahead of you, and see that every time you were in those valleys, everyone ended with a peak, every time you got out of it. And there's a lot of altitude change there, but none of it is permanent. And so to this day, I can still, whenever I'm scrolling through my playlist, I can see that song, or that playlist. And I don't listen to that every day. Like, no one's supposed to be that happy every day. But I know that whenever, I know that someday I'll get back to that peak. And when I do get there, I'll have just the right soundtrack for it.
Nice. Thank you all for joining me. I appreciate it. And for sharing your stories. Sorry I can't get to the callers. We are out of time. I'll be back next week for a conversation about medical treatment options for obesity with Dr. Sean Lee and Dr. Justin Clark from Anchorage Bariatrics. That's next Monday, April 3rd at 10, repeating at 8 on FM 91.1, Alaska Public Media. Thanks to Amon Swenson, who handled the web editing and was our man on the phones, and Line 1 producer Zakia Cummings. For all of us at Line 1, thanks for taking the time to join us today, and especially our storytellers. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.